The Painless Living Show with host and pain treatment expert, Dr. Michael Cusero, and co-host, John Ashton. If you or someone you love suffers from chronic pain, get answers here. Call now, 888-440-4442. That's 888-440-4442. Or visit online, painlesslivingshow.com.
And good morning. How you feeling?
Well, I'm feeling pretty good for this time of the morning.
And you know, spring is so close you can almost touch it. It's great out there. I am John Ashton. He is Dr. Michael Cusero. And if the answer to the question, how you doing, is I hurt, this is the man to talk to. And the number is 888-440-4442. Topic today, specific autoimmune conditions. And I got to tell you, doctor, some of the stuff on this list here sounds serious, big time serious.
Some of it is.
See?
Serious things.
I mean, we're talking like multiple sclerosis.
That's right. That's where your immune system attacks your own nerves as if they're foreign objects trying to start an infection or something.
Is that just confusion on your body's part, or the things you can do to
basically
set it straight?
Look at it. Yeah, if your immune system attacks your nervous system, we call it multiple sclerosis.
Mm-hmm. Then there's rheumatoid arthritis, ulcerative colitis, Graves' disease. A few things I'm not even going to try to pronounce that sound bad. Thyroiditis, diabetes, lupus, endometriosis, Guillain-Barré syndrome, which I had a friend who suffered from that. It's terrible. In Crohn's disease, psoriasis, I mean, a lot of stuff.
And the list goes on.
It does. It does.
The thing is, they're probably all related. We just give them a label based upon which organ is the one getting the symptoms.
Now, the last one on the list here, celiac disease, we kind of know that that's a reaction to stuff that you take into your body on purpose.
Right. That's specifically a reaction to the gluten that's found in wheat.
Are any of the other things as easy to, I guess, get rid of by changing diet or?
Some are. The
lifestyle.
Thing is, changing diet can help with almost all of these.
Oh, okay. All right. Which one would you like to tackle first? Or is it something that we should just lump together and?
Well, I guess we can start by lumping it together if you want to, but since you brought up celiac disease, we'll talk about that first. What happens is your body starts out, you just don't get along well with the proteins that are found in wheat.
Right.
And that sets up an irritation inside your digestive tract, and eventually that irritation crosses over some boundary where it's no longer just an irritation, but now it's your immune system is actually attacking the lining of your gut instead of just the things that are you're putting in your gut. And that's when it becomes an autoimmune condition, so that it's your immune system that perpetuates the irritation and not just the food.
I guess I have so at that point, it's any alleviation that would come from changing your diet would be longer to take, or
it'll still help. Okay. In fact, that's still the primary thing to do.
All right.
But yeah, it takes longer, and it tends to never go away 100%. Once you've developed autoimmunity, those antibodies are there for the rest of your life. But if you can change the diet before then, at least in theory, then it goes away and it never comes back, and you may be able to tolerate that food again in the future if conditions are different.
Nip it in the bud. I have a friend who has a skin condition as a result of celiac. So,
very frequent complication of celiac disease. Mm-hmm. We've got a caller on the line right now. We're going to go to John calling from Louisville, Kentucky. John, you're on the air at the Painless Living Show. How can I help you this morning?
Well, I have a long history of a pain in the left hip.
Okay.
But it reached a point where it wouldn't hold, so I stopped seeing the chiropractor. And I've seen a doctor, and he got an epidural for me, which did not work. And then he referred me to another doctor, and he got a shot in my left hip, you know, guided by the X-ray machine. That didn't work. And I get relief by laying down and putting a little pressure on it, and that takes the edge off of it, and then I move around and I forget about it most rest of the day. But also, this particular leg, I've had spasms in it, but that's been at least a year since that's happened. And the pain is more than just in the hip, but that's the main place. And my feet burn on the bottom.
Both feet or just the foot on the leg where the hip hurts?
Say that again, please.
Is it both feet that burn or just the...
Oh, yeah, both feet burn.
All right. The fact that both feet burn means that it's probably someplace up higher in your spinal canal, if it is a nerve problem from like bone spurs or arthritis, something like that. And when they did that epidural injection, was that in your low back?
Yes. Now, since then, the second doctor has wanted me to have another epidural. I wasn't not told this in the office. I received it by mail, and I thought, well, I've been there, done that, and I had it canceled. So I haven't seen him since then, but I don't know whether I should have another epidural or not. I thought when you have an epidural, there's just one epidural. They don't target a different area. I didn't know that, so I don't know whether I have another one or not.
Well, the thing about the epidural injection, if it was on the place where the pain is coming from, it would have made a difference. The fact that it didn't make any difference at all, I wouldn't have another epidural in the same place. Now,
yeah.
It could be that you've got a referred pain from somewhere else, and an epidural injection at another place might help. But I think that it's worthwhile to do a little investigation first. And the first thing might be to get an X-ray of your neck, because...
Well, now, I got a problem with my neck.
Okay.
I fell, and the impact was completely on my forehead, and that's been over a year ago, and it's progressed where it affects my left shoulder, left arm, and it has really hurt my writing, my script ability.
Okay, you know what? That could be part of the problem with the pain in your hip and the burning in your feet as well.
Hip pain long before the neck.
Well, you could have already had a bone spur there causing the hip pain, and then when you fell, that aggravated enough where it started affecting your arm and your writing also. One of the things that could be done is if you get another epidural injection, have that injection done in your cervical spine, up in your neck, and see if that does anything for the hip pain or the burning in your feet. If so, that's a little bit more indication that those pains are coming from the problem in your neck also.
Okay, now this second doctor has X-rayed my lower back, and he says I have spurs there, but he didn't mention any
Okay, that music playing in the background means we're getting ready to go to a break, so I'm going to ask you to hold on through the break, and we'll finish discussing this when we come back.
John Sullivan, of course, has got space for you too at 888-440-4442. Be right back. We'll be right back.
To learn more about the topics or products mentioned on the program, visit our website, painlessliving.com.
And to get any questions answered right now, 888-440-4442. We're going to go right back to the phones with John now.
Yes, John, are you still with me?
Yes, I'm with you.
Okay. When you started developing the burning in your feet, did you start having
Can you speak louder?
Okay. When you started getting the burning in your feet, did you start getting any other problems in your feet like you did with your arm not being able to write properly? Do you still have normal coordination and strength in your legs?
No, I have to be careful. No, I don't have, when I go up the steps, but the leg performs better sometimes than others.
Okay. One of the things that might be a problem for you is what's called spinal stenosis. Has anybody taken x-rays or MRI of your neck?
I've had an MRI of my lower back and my left hip.
Okay. I think it might be a good idea to get an MRI of your neck because all of
I got an MRI of the neck.
Okay.
And the new doctor said to me, he mentioned my neck and my hip. He says, what do you want to take care of? And I said, both of them. And he ignored the neck and went to the hip.
Okay. It might work better the other way around because the neck problem might be causing the pain in the hip, especially if you had the injection in the hip that did absolutely nothing. That's a really strong indication that your pain is not coming from your hip joint. The most likely place for it to come from is your low back, but they did an epidural injection there, and that also had no effect.
Correct.
So the next most likely place for the pain in your hip to be coming from is your neck. And the fact that you've got burning in both feet adds to that likelihood that it's coming from your neck. In fact, that might make it a little more likely than your low back. And then when you fell and you started having problems with your shoulder and arm and problems writing, that's another indication that there's probably a significant problem in your neck. And the fact that you're losing coordination makes me wonder about spinal stenosis, which, depending on if it's mild spinal stenosis, sometimes that can be treated with traction, chiropractic manipulations, and maybe some injections. If it's serious spinal stenosis, then surgery would be the best way to treat that, to decompress your spinal cord before it gets squeezed to the point where walking becomes more difficult or impossible.
I do have trouble. A walker gives a lot of relief when I walk.
Okay. Once again, that could be spinal stenosis. If you feel better when you've got something to lean on, then that's something that people frequently find when they have spinal stenosis.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, go back and get tell the guy you want to get your neck looked into a little more thoroughly and see if you can't get relief from both.
Okay, well, thank you.
All right, John, thank you for listening. Thank you for calling, and good luck.
All right. 888-440-4442 is the phone number. Have any questions?
Got a...
It's a creeping crud coming out of
today. Not so close to the microphone.
Yeah.
I'm gaggling it then.
Wow. And also painlessliving.com. You can go there because some folks probably are loath to have their problems aired in public. So you can always just go there and send a complete question via email. Although we do have another caller on the line.
Yes, we do. We've got Carol calling from Jeffersonville. Carol, you're on the air at the Painless Living Show. How can I help you this morning? Hello, Carol. I hope I didn't. That button, too. Okay. Carol, you're on the air now. How can I help you this morning?
Good morning. I have a pain under my left shoulder blade. Is it the scapula?
Yes.
Where I feel like it is vibrating. Like when you go to a chiropractor and they put those TENS units on you,
yes,
and it sends an electrical current, my shoulder feels like that all the time. And I went to my massage therapist, and he really worked hard on it with absolutely no improvement or no relief. And I just, it just is like, it's like a little vibration under there all the time.
Okay, the most likely source for that, that's something that I see with people in my office very commonly. And what it is, there's a nerve called the dorsal scapular nerve. It starts at the base of your neck, right where your neck joins to your thoracic, to your thorax. And it goes down on the inside, kind of between your shoulder blade and your spine, all the way down to the tip of the shoulder blade. And when that nerve is irritated, it can make the muscles there quiver and twitch. But more commonly, what it does is it causes this aching pain, constant nagging pain, and it can drive people nuts. That can be, when you said that you went to a chiropractor to get a TENS unit, did the chiropractor see you for this particular problem?
No, I haven't gone to a chiropractor in a long time.
Okay, because most chiropractors, when you tell them that's what you have, they know exactly where to do the adjustments. It's at the base of your neck, C6-7 and C7-T1, and most of the time, chiropractic adjustments are all it takes to, if not make it go away, at least make it quit for a while. There are more invasive things that I do for people when that doesn't work, but my advice would be two things. First, go see a chiropractor and have the adjustments done at your lower portion of your neck. And second, see about getting an inversion table for home use. Do you know what an inversion table is?
Got one.
Do you use it?
No.
Okay. Well, they work a little better when you get on them. Anyway, what that does, there's probably a narrow opening where the nerve is coming out of your spine to go down your back. And when you get on an inversion table, it opens that opening up just a little bit more to give that nerve a little bit more room, some breathing room, and it tends to calm it down so that it doesn't stay so irritated. And that can be a way to get it to keep from coming back.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you so much.
Okay, Carol, thanks for listening. Thanks for calling.
All right, Carol.
My pleasure. Thank you.
888-440-4442. Inversion table, we use it all the time at our house. It's very great for drying sweaters.
Yeah, that's right.
That's the way it works. Again, 888-440-4442 or painlessliving.com, and you can always click on the contact button there if you need to send Dr. Cassaro a question. Autoimmune conditions topic here, but other topics, if it's affecting you immediately, it's much more important to you than whatever. So
whatever hurts,
don't hesitate. Any questions you might have, it's 888-440-4442. One of the things that you talk about ad infinitum or ad nauseam, depending on how you feel about it, is exercise, sleep, and diet. And even for autoimmune conditions, which sound very severe, and some of them are very severe, those are the first three things that probably you should look at, right?
That's right, yeah. And it almost doesn't matter what the condition is. If you're exercising, your body's maintenance and repair system is going to be working at a higher level, and it'll do a better job of keeping you going.
Mm-hmm.
If you're sleeping well, that's when your body does all that maintenance and repair, is when you're asleep.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you're eating well, the only thing your body has to maintain and repair itself with is the things you put in your body.
Right.
You put good things in, then you get a much better result. If you live on the equivalent of, let's say, duct tape and coat hangers, then that's what your body has to hold yourself together with.
Which don't work very well all the time, so take that to the bank. It's 888-440-4442, and we're going to go right back to the phones now.
Yes, we've got Shirley calling. Shirley, you're on the air at the Painless Living Show. How can I help you this morning?
Oh, yes, thank you for taking my call.
Well, you're welcome.
My question was, should I go to my thyroid specialist or to an endocrinologist?
Okay,
now,
just a minute, Shirley.
The reason I asked that question.
We're getting ready to go to a break. Shirley, I'm going to put you on hold and ask you to hang on through the break, okay?
Very good.
So hold on, please.
It's 888-440-4442. There's room for your question, too. Give us a call. We'll take a quick break and be right back.
It's the Painless Living Show. To be part of the program, call now. 1-888-440-4442.
Busy day on the phones. We're going to head right back right now.
Yes, Shirley, are you still with me?
Yes, I am.
Okay, right before the break, we started to talk about your thyroid.
Right. Well, I really feel like that I have a malfunctioning thyroid. Here's the reason. I've been treated for high blood pressure and for years and kept it at bay with medication, no problem. But last year, just for a period of my 2 weeks, all of a sudden my blood pressure elevated. So I went to my physician and he gave me more blood pressure medicine, a different kind. Well, in a week or two, my blood pressure had gone back to normal and I didn't even need that medicine. So we did away with the medicine. Couldn't figure out what was going on. But in the meantime, I've been going to my thyroid specialist, and I've had nodules. I've had everything done, the scans done, the biopsies done, and there's nodules on the thyroid, but they're non-malignant. So since then, I've had another episode of this high blood pressure going up, and I'm wondering if it's a thyroid that's malfunctioning.
Well, it could be because your history is pretty common for somebody that has thyroid with nodules there that intermittently become active and start to release excessive amounts of thyroid hormone, and that's frequently an autoimmune condition called Graves' disease.
Oh.
The thing is, when you do a lab test on the thyroid, you only find the things that you're looking for. So what they probably haven't looked for is autoantibodies. So you could go back to either one of the doctors, the thyroid specialist or your endocrinologist, and ask them if they checked for the autoantibodies, or you just ask if they checked for antibodies. And if not, draw a test there, because if those antibodies are there, they'll be there even when your thyroid seems to be behaving itself.
I see.
That'll give you a clue that that's what the problem is. Now, there are a couple of ways to approach that. The standard traditional medical approach would be then to destroy your thyroid gland, either to take it out or to give some radioactive iodine and destroy it. There are other alternative medicine approaches that allow you to keep your thyroid gland, but calm down those episodes where it becomes hyperactive. And one of the common things to do is to just take iodine. That can help quite a bit as far as...
You know, I mentioned this.
Excuse me?
To one of the people at the thyroid specialist office. And they sort of shook their head and said, oh, no, we don't do that. And I thought, years ago, I had a person tell me, are you taking iodine for your thyroid? And I didn't even know I had a thyroid problem, but they had noticed when I swallowed, there was a lump there. And then I had the border removed years and years ago. I had was not given anything, any medication or anything. It was just... medically removed, surgically removed, and I was fine ever since until just, I would say, a year ago. And I just happened to have my thyroid checked again. And then that was when the nodules were on there.
Yeah.
And,
well, a lot of times those nodules are caused from iodine deficiency a lot of times. So if you take iodine, a lot of times those nodules will just gradually disappear. The other thing is that if your thyroid gland is prone to intermittent spurts of activity, it tends to level it out so that it doesn't act erratically like that.
Well, here's what happened. One side had nothing on it. The other side had several nodules. 6 months later to check the nodule, they had not changed. But on the other side, which had no nodules, had a large one had grown there.
Okay.
But no one mentioned taking anything.
Yeah, it would probably be a real good idea to take iodine. There's a form that you can buy online, over the internet, or at health food stores that doesn't require any prescription, and that's called Iodorol. I-O-D-O-R-A-L, Iodorol. And like I said, you get that. It's capsules that you can get at a health food store. And that'll help quite a bit with your thyroid. The other thing you could do is to take kelp, a seaweed form of seaweed. It's very high in iodine. That's good for your thyroid.
That's K-E-L-P?
Yes.
Now, that's also from a health food store.
That's correct.
Okay. I'll be there today to get these because I believe what you said. And I don't know what they're treating you with and this and that, but I thought I got to call the doctor that knows everything. And I'll thank you.
Well,
really,
thank you.
It's amazing what they put you through. But let me ask you another question.
Shoot.
At the time I had that removed years ago, should I have been taking iodine of some sort or not?
Probably so. And I think I can say that without knowing a whole lot about your medical history other than what you've told me, just because so many people are iodine deficient. One of the main reasons is that our North American soil here doesn't have a lot of iodine in it, so even our locally grown produce doesn't tend to have as much iodine as produce from other parts of the world. But even when we get our produce that's imported, it's picked very early before it's fully mature so that it can ripen on the way here, and so it doesn't have as much iodine in it either. So consequently, so many people are low in iodine that it's probably pretty good advice for most everybody to take some iodine.
Right. Well, that makes sense, doesn't it? But the fact that I mentioned it and they sort of poo-pooed away, no.
Well, maybe that's because they knew they'd lose a patient.
Well, it's really pathetic what you go through. But, I looked at my history, and I went in on the Internet, and I looked at a lot of things. And you know what? You can get high blood pressure from lack of vitamins and iodine and everything else.
That's correct.
That causes it. And what they do, they don't find the cause. They just keep throwing medicine at you. And we realize this extra medicine didn't help. And there's so much side effects from taking medication that to help one thing, and I know you have to keep your blood pressure down, but there's other ways to help it to go down probably besides taking medicine.
Well, good for you. And you know what? More and more people are starting to see things that way.
Well, you know, it's just we're not really getting what we need when we, for our daily diet or whatever, and it makes sense.
All right, Shirley.
Into your body, and half reduces it.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling.
Thank you very much.
Good luck.
And it's like you have a convert now. Something that you've been saying over and over again. We're going to jump right back in.
Yes, we've got Tony. It says here, Tony's calling from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Tony, you're on the air at the Painless Living Show. How can I help you this morning? Hello, Tony?
Hello?
Oh, there you are. Okay.
Oh, hey, how you doing?
I just have to make sure I push all the right buttons.
It's okay.
So you're calling from...
Oh, sorry.
You're calling from Philadelphia, is that correct?
Yes, I am. Been a fan for quite some time.
Okay, well, thank you for listening way over there. How can I help you?
I'm a hemophiliac type A and mild to moderate, and my target area for bleeds was always my knees and my thighs, and I've had quite a few bleeds over the years, and I get these bad leg aches, and it comes a few times a week, and I don't want to be on the narcotic painkillers. I've been off them for about 4 or 5 years now, and but these leg aches come so bad sometimes, and it's just I can't get rid of them. Do you have any advice?
Well, is it because you're bleeding into your legs, or could you be bleeding somewhere else that's causing that
No,
pain?
But I've been very lucky. I've changed my health. I lost weight. I haven't, knock on wood, I haven't had a bleed in about 3 years.
Okay. One of the things that a lot of hemophiliacs' problems they run into is everything else that comes up in life, that automatically the assumption is that it's caused from the hemophilia.
Yeah.
The reality is that you could get anything that anybody else could get in addition to problems from hemophilia.
Yeah.
So if you haven't had a significant bleed in 3 years, I'd say you're doing really great. But the other thing is, if this pain is coming on here recently and you're not having bleeds, I'd look for other things that anybody could get. So where are these pains? Are they in your thighs?
Yeah, and it seems to be in both of them at pretty much the same spot. Like, it goes down the front of my thigh on each leg, and it's like, it kind of reminds me almost like growing pains that I had as a kid.
Okay. Is this like right above your knee, or is it more on the inside of your thigh?
Right, like above the knee, yep.
Okay. I'm guessing that you don't engage in a lot of strenuous physical activity. Is that correct?
Yeah, I have to be very careful of any kind of impacts to the head or my legs.
Yeah. One of the things that you could have there is some tendonitis. There's a big tendon that goes from that large muscle on the front of your thigh down through your kneecap. Your kneecap is actually in the middle of that tendon and then attaches to your lower leg. So if you get some tendonitis there, that could cause that pain. And the best way to treat that is with topical medications that soak in there. Actually, we're getting ready to go to another break. If you want to hold on through the break, we'll talk more about topical medications you can use for that tendonitis when we come back.
Hang on, Tony.
888-440-4442.
We've got room for your calls. It's going to take a quick break and be right back.
It's like an office visit without the copay. The Painless Living Show.
Very busy morning on the Painless Living Show, and we're going to go right back to Tony up in Philadelphia.
Yes, Tony, are you still with me?
Yes, I am.
Okay. On the tendonitis, right above your kneecaps on both legs, the topical medications that work best are going to be very similar to the over-the-counter pain medications that you would take for tendonitis. There is one that most insurance will pay for, and that's called diclofenac. It's a prepared gel that comes from a regular pharmaceutical company, and you can get your doctor to write a prescription for that. You can just rub that on that area where it hurts, and that'll soak in through your skin and get a lot more medicine to where it needs to be than you could ever get taking the same medicine by mouth.
Absolutely.
Okay. Now, the other piece of advice here is that if it tends to always seem to affect both legs at the same time, you might also ask your doctor about getting an X-ray of your low back.
Okay.
Because it could be that something there is kind of predisposing you to keep developing this tendonitis.
See, that's interesting that you say that, because I get this random back pinch that came out of, like, nowhere, and it's been about the same time. I didn't even put the two together.
Yeah, see, when you get one leg or the other, that's pretty easy. That could be just something, you know, happening to cause that to flare up. But when both of them happen at the same time, usually you have to go look for a place where there could be one problem that would cause symmetrical results, symmetrical symptoms.
Okay.
And that one problem would be somewhere in your low back.
All right. Okay.
All right.
I'll definitely do that.
Well, Tony, good luck. Thank you for listening.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for calling, and spread the word to everybody else you know in Philadelphia.
Absolutely. I'm a big fan, and you do great work. You have a good day.
You too.
See? Man, just world-renowned, I think, is how we should start introducing you.
World-renowned all over Philadelphia.
All over Philadelphia. Maybe if he's really, really thankful, he could send you a cheesesteak. Those are great.
Oh, yeah. You know, I've visited Philadelphia, and they take those things seriously.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I went to school in Philly, put myself through school making cheesesteaks at night. You want a good cheesesteak? You're coming over sometime. 888-440-4442. That is the phone number. Things have calmed down a little bit, so there's plenty of room for you. Autoimmune conditions, what we're talking about on this side. One of our callers actually had a problem that we were prepared to address today, and that would be Graves' disease. You want to go a little deeper into that?
Yeah, it's just in general autoimmune thyroiditis. It can be high function or low function.
Mm-hmm.
The high function is Graves' disease. The low function is usually referred to as Hashimoto's disease. It's probably all the same thing. Most of the people with the high-functioning autoimmune thyroiditis ultimately end up with low-functioning autoimmune thyroiditis. And a whole lot of the people with the low-functioning autoimmune thyroiditis have had episodes very similar to what Shirley described,
mm-hmm.
where their blood pressure went up and other symptoms, and nobody really made a diagnosis, but it just went away.
Right.
And then they get discovered down the line that they have low thyroid function. And in retrospect, you wonder if they had an episode of a high thyroid mm-hmm. function at one time in the past.
Hmm. How does one go about treating that? You mentioned iodine. Is that smart for someone to take on a just, as you said, our food is lacking in the amount of iodine you would expect to be in food naturally?
Well, not only is it lacking because our produce is lacking in iodine, but it's also lacking because most people don't eat much produce.
Yeah. Same end of that.
Iodine deficiency is a real common problem, but we don't have any really high-tech fancy lab tests to check iodine.
Okay.
In fact, the only lab tests we have really aren't very good at all for checking people's iodine. But you can be pretty sure that most people, even if they're not outright deficient in iodine, they're mm-hmm. at the low functioning levels of the normal range of iodine. So it's a good idea for almost anybody to take iodine. Now, they recognized this about 100 years ago. Mm-hmm. This is not new.
Right.
That's why they put iodide in the salt, because they figured, okay, what can we do to get iodine to almost to as many people as possible mm-hmm. to prevent these kind of problems? And somebody came up with the bright idea, let's put it in the salt. Well, then us doctors came along about 30, 40 years ago and started telling people, don't eat the salt, it's bad for you.
Yeah.
So we've got all these iodine deficiency problems that are becoming very commonplace again,
mm-hmm.
but we haven't been re-indoctrinated into looking for iodine deficiency problems. So if we're not looking for them, we don't see them.
Right, exactly. So then we would be well advised to maybe bring it up if we're feeling the symptoms that you've mentioned for Graves' disease, maybe say, hey, would it hurt if I did this?
You know, as a doctor, I'm supposed to say, don't go to the internet, come see your doctor.
Right.
But this is one area where I think the internet is probably ahead of medicine, okay. mainstream medicine, on nutritional supplementation, particularly with things like iodine.
Mm-hmm.
So this is one thing where I'd say, if you suspect these kind of problems, research it on the internet. Find out what you can do on your own, and when that's not working, then go get some blood tests done and see what kind of treatments you can get.
Is iodine something that's included in multivitamin mineral, or is it something you need to do specifically?
Well, it's not in the vitamins.
Okay.
Okay. It's in the mineral supplements.
Okay.
But mineral supplements, a lot of people don't take because minerals take up space.
Yeah.
So you have to take a lot of pills.
Yeah.
Vitamins, you can take one pill.
And feel much better about yourself.
Yeah, but minerals,
Painless
Living is 4 to 8 pills a day, usually.
Yeah, well, that's too many. PainlessLivingShow.com. If you have a question, you can always use the contact button on the website. Get directly through to Dr. Cazzaro via email. Or 888-440-4442 is a much more immediate technique. And I believe someone's done that right now, haven't they?
Yeah, but I can't process. Get to them yet. They're still in the process of giving their name and...
All the pertinent details. Yeah. Well, we will get to it. It's coming along. Again, you want to get in line, 888-440-4442.
The show coming to a close, so if you want to get in the queue, this is the time to call.
Speak now or forever hold your peace, as it has been said.
Or at least hold it till next week.
Next week.
We're always back next Saturday.
And again, you can always follow you on Twitter, too. You throw out some very meaningful and informational and entertaining tidbits throughout the course of a week.
It's at Painless Living, and some people will dispute those tidbits.
And also, you can join and follow the doctor on Facebook.
We're going to go now to Aaron, calling from New Albany, Indiana. Aaron, you're on the air at the Painless Living Show. How can I help you this morning? Hello, Aaron.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you just fine. We've just got a couple minutes left.
Okay, I just had a quick question about, if you know, you were talking about autoimmune things, if you know anything about Sjogren's, or I have an issue where my fingers get that rhinitis where they kind of turn white and cold and get numb.
Yes.
And I had a procedure done the other day, and when I couldn't get a oxygen saturation in my fingers. They had to do it on my toes, which was kind of weird, I thought. And when you research that on the internet, it gives you, talks about that kind of thing. But it also talks about carpal tunnel, which I'm probably very likely to have because I work on the computer all day long. And I was just wondering if you had any insight in that.
Yeah, if they were able to get the pulse oximeter to work on your toe but not on your finger,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to suggest that you either have a problem in your neck or the carpal tunnel syndrome that you mentioned that could be making your Raynaud's condition worse. And for our listeners, what that is it's where your blood vessels stay constricted so that you don't get a lot of blood flow to your fingers and toes, and they get cold very easily, and then they usually hurt. The thing is, if you've got anything else that could also constrict blood vessels and restrict blood flow, then that'll just make it that much worse. And I suspect that's what is going on with you, just because it should be harder to get your pulse ox, your reading on the pulse oximeter from your toes than your fingers.
Oh, really? Huh. I notice when I go outside when it's cold that a lot of times when I come back inside, especially my index fingers and on either hand will be numb and take probably about 30 minutes to kind of get back to normal.
Okay, if it's a specific finger, that helps to narrow it down quite a bit. You might get an X-ray of your neck and see if you have a disc problem at C5-6. That's the one that gets the index finger.
Okay. Yeah. Well, it's not just my index finger, but it'll be like my index finger and usually my third finger, and it's on both hands.
Okay. Well, both hands could be Raynaud's disease, but I suspect that you've got a problem in your neck, too.
Okay.
All right. We've reached the end of the show, Aaron. I thank you for listening. Thank you for calling. Good luck on that X-ray, and let us know how that works for you sometime.
And that is it for this week. PainlessLivingShow.com is a website you can check out. And again, you can follow the doctor on Twitter at
Painless Living.
And the Facebook page is
Painless Living Radio Show.
And then again, every Saturday morning, right here at 11 o'clock.
That's right. I'm your host, Dr. Michael Cazzaro.
And I'm co-host John Ashton, and we look forward to being back with you next Saturday.